This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, as Iranians prepare to go to the polls, we'll talk about who's not running, who's not voting, and what that may mean for the eventual winners. An update on the situation in Iran tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Haiti is in crisis for the past few weeks. An uprising that has left 57 people dead is now threatening to engulf the second largest city, Cap Haïtien. Leaders are calling for international aid, but both the United States and France are reluctant to send troops to the tiny island nation. If you've been to Haiti or have an opinion about what U.S. policy should be there, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. Or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And here to tell us what's behind the violent uprising is Daniel Erickson, Director of Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue. He joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
How did this situation in Haiti get started? What's been going on these last few weeks?
Well, I would say the starting point should be that there's been increasingly distrust of Aristide within Haiti, and there's been growing discontent with the economic climate of the country.
Aristide, of course, President Bertrand Aristide.
Yes, President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. That is the starting point. What you've seen over the last several years is a gradual deterioration of the Haitian state. I think Haiti's probably entering a stage that you could describe as a failing state, if not quite yet a failed state. And this uprising is part of that overall panorama, where you have several rebel groups. They've been called rebels. That might be an overly formal term. But in fact, political gangs that have taken it upon themselves to capture several neighboring towns, to express their discontent with the current government, and with the ultimate objective, I believe, of trying to oust President Aristide.
Well, let's go through a little recent history. Jean-Bertrand Aristide was elected president, overthrown in a military coup. The coup itself was then displaced under U.S. military pressure, and President Aristide reinstalled with the arrival of U.S. military forces to help repair the situation that had devolved into chaos.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. The U.S. military, under a U.N. mandate, intervened in 1994 to help reinstate Aristide. He finished serving what remained of his five-year term, stepped down in early 1996, and there was a subsequent president, René Préval, for 5 years, and Aristide was reelected in November 2000 and has been president again since February of 2001. However, in the run-up to his election, there was a legislative election took place where the results were disputed, and subsequently there was not international observers at the presidential election. So Aristide has struggled throughout his second term with this question of dubious legitimacy, and as a result of the electoral mishaps of 2000, a substantial amount of aid has been cut off to Haiti. The U.S. government no longer gives direct aid to Haiti. For a while, the multilateral development banks did not either, although now the Inter-American Development Bank has become re-engaged with the country. So you have seen, in addition to the ongoing political tensions and political crisis, an economic deterioration in the country as well.
Now, is there any evidence, you talked about these political gangs at this point, is there any evidence that the previous members of the military who were ousted, previous opponents of President Aristide, are they in any way involved in trying to organize these or coalesce these groups?
Well, they do appear to be in the mix. It's a somewhat motley crew, as far as I can tell, of the gangs in Haiti. You do apparently have former members of the Duvalier military, some of whom were based in the Dominican Republic and coming back over into Haiti. You also have, in essence, political gangs or criminal gangs that previously may have been allied with Aristide or just independent. Perhaps some of them involved with Colombian narco traffickers as well. And so there's a criminal element as well as the actual military opposition. Then in this mix, you also have a democratic opposition in Haiti that has protested the abuse of press freedoms and the lack of democratic governance of the current administration there. And so in addition to what you might describe as the legitimate democratic opposition, you now have much more violent and unsavory elements in the mix.
And what in the meantime has been happening with the Haitian economy, which again, back at the time of the previous American intervention, was in ruins?
That's right. Well, Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It's twice as poor as any other country, and it's social indicators are on par with the war-torn regions of sub-Saharan Africa. Haiti's it does not have much of a productive capacity, so it's largely dependent on foreign aid. The cutoff of direct aid to Haiti by the United States, by the European Union, and other international actors proved to be quite damaging. Haiti does receive in the neighborhood of $600 or $700 million a year of remittances that are received from relatives living in the United States and Canada, and that has been an essential element in maintaining the basic welfare of the people there.
Those are Haitians working in the U.S. or Canada who send a portion of their earnings back home to their families.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Let's get some callers on the line if you'd like to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us TOTN@NPR.org, and we'll begin with Jean-Christopher, who joins us from Miami, Florida.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I've already, you know, give my comment, you know, to someone. And then, you know, I said, you know, I want, please, U.S., you know, going into Haiti and help.
Hello? Well, evidently, we're having some difficulty with the cell phone service, and so we'll hope that John Christopher calls us back. Let's get a caller, Leon, and Leon's with us from West Palm Beach in Florida.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
We went in there, we helped Aristide, and that's it. In other words, we never told him what to do. It sounds crazy to me saying a thing like that to a person who's going to run a government. But it seems that at least we should have had some people there guiding him, telling him exactly what he should do. But what we're doing is let him everything happening by himself, and he doesn't seem to care for the people.
So you think that the United States should have maintained its presence in Haiti?
Well, why did we go there for the first time?
Okay, let's get a comment, Daniel Erickson.
Well, I think the caller makes an excellent point, which is that the United States did not ultimately exhibit a lot of staying power in Haiti. The intervention took place in 1994. By 1996, the U.S. military is pretty much wrapping things up. And then by 2000, we had cut off aid again because Haiti was not properly democratic and that it wasn't pursuing the democratic path as much as we would like. I think part of the problem is that the Clinton administration really promised what could possibly be achieved in Haiti and said they were going to restore democracy in a country where democracy had never really existed. Of course, in the later 1990s, that proved difficult. The political problems continued there. And it was very easy for the critics of the Clinton administration's policy to say, look, what you're doing isn't working. Democracy hasn't taken root yet.
So if the exercise of what we saw in the intervention during the Clinton administration, if that was indeed nation building, it was not a very sustained attempt.
That's correct. I would call it a very half-hearted attempt at nation building. And one of the problems that Haiti presents to U.S. policymakers is it's a country that has no easy solution. Any sort of engagement in Haiti is going to have to be measured in decades, not in a year or 2 years. You don't have the functioning institutions. You have such deep levels of poverty that there are no quick fixes.
Is the United States the only available outside agency? What about Canada? As Secretary Powell mentioned yesterday, the Secretary of State mentioned Canada and the Caribbean states perhaps could provide forces. Is the OAS the proper venue or the United Nations?
Well, that's correct. There are many different actors that could play a role. But what you're seeing is that overall, Canada, Latin America, Europe ultimately feel that Haiti falls under the U.S. sphere of influence. And so I think if the U.S. provided greater leadership, you could probably get a lot of other countries and actors involved in this. But if the United States decides, as we apparently are at the moment, to stay out of this, then it's more difficult for countries like France and Canada to mobilize without U.S. support, although there is some evidence that the French is taking a potential peacekeeping operation there very seriously.
I'm not sure that Secretary Powell expressed it specifically, but obviously American forces are busy elsewhere in the world at the moment, and there's a considerable call that the United States forces are overstretched, as it is with commitments in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're discussing the situation in Haiti. Our guest is Daniel Erickson. He is the Director of Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Carl is with us from Coral Springs, Florida.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'm a graduate student at Nova Southeastern University. I'm also a Haitian citizen, and I just had a comment and a question. My comment is regarding the current president. The people of Haiti really had great hope that he did something for them, because he himself comes from the slums, and you know, he was a priest, and they really had hope that he would supplies and, you know, built on the infrastructure in Haiti and hospitals and schools and so on and so forth. But he has not, you know, basically the corruption and the violence has continued. My question is, how long is this current administration and the Bush administration going to wait before they actually do something about this? Because Haiti is like, you know, a couple miles away from Florida, and this is getting worse and worse by the day.
Yeah, more than a couple of miles, but we get your point.
Yes.
Daniel Erickson?
Well, so the second part of your question, the feel I'm getting is that the current U.S. government is going to wait as long as it possibly can before doing anything in Haiti. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld is quoted as saying something to the effect, well, these things in Haiti, they ebb, they flow, and we're hopeful it will remain below a certain threshold.
Last year, there was similar reluctance to commit American forces to another crisis that time in Liberia.
Oh, right, that's correct. That's correct, although one could argue that Haiti being so much closer to the to U.S. shores, there might be a greater security element there. As to Aristide, clearly he did enter with such high hopes. There's no other way around the fact that his term in office has been a disappointment. He has not been able to bring about greater results for the Haitian people. But he was also operating in an extremely constrained political environment, both in terms of Haiti's relations with the international community, as well as the internal social divisions and political tensions within Haiti.
But is Carl correct to say that his administration has been corrupt, or that he personally has been corrupt?
Well, I think there's certainly allegations of corruption. I think that it's probably nothing on the scale as to what's been seen under Duvalier, but you have to remember that so much of the system of government there is highly informal. I believe that somewhere in the neighborhood of 40-50% of Haiti's national government budget runs through the discretionary accounts of different government ministers. Mm. It's so hard to keep track of what of the money that you know it's possible.
Thanks for the call, Carl. The most recent Duvalier, of course, Jean-Claude Duvalier, Baby Doc, as he was known, exiled to France, where I understand he still lives. Has he weighed in on this?
I think that he is probably hopeful that there's a constituency for his return to Haiti. And you know that things in Haiti have reached a pretty pass when the Duvalier period looks like the good old days. But I think that really he has very little political support. There's not a constituency for his return. I think that is not in the cards.
One difference between this situation and what we saw in the 90s was the arrival of Haitian refugees in this country. That seemed to be the precipitating event last time around. Are you suggesting that we may have to wait to see that again?
Well, it's a possibility, and there is some talk of preparing the base at Guantanamo Bay for a possible exodus of Haitian refugees, but the laws governing migration of Haitians in the U.S. are quite strict, and there's detention. They do not have favorable migration treatment as political refugees the same way that Cubans do, for example.
Let's get another caller in. Joe is with us from Miami. We're getting a preponderance of calls from the state of Florida, as you might expect. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
You know, I will just listen to the last comment you made, and I thoroughly disagree. I don't think the Haitians want to leave Haiti. If they did, they'd be leaving already. I think that right now the reason they're still there is because they want to change. Otherwise, you'd already seen a mass exodus. You know, the Haitian people, you know, let me add, I'm Haitian-American also, and I've had the good fortune of being able to travel to Haiti several times. It's a wonderful country with a tremendous, you know, amount of resources that have been thoroughly neglected and thoroughly untapped. My position is that what would work out great for Haiti is to, you know, let the country, pretty much almost what Americans did, tried to do before, but finish up what they started, and actually put these people not only on the road back to a democratic process, but to actually see that through 100%. You see, they went through the entire thing from the last time that we invaded Haiti, but nothing ever came of it, because they put a person in the power that was thoroughly corrupt, and he did worse than, you know, than each one of his predecessors, and the country has completely gone downhill ever since. You know, there needs to be some type of serious long-term intervention there, and that's what's been missing from, you know, from what I see. The commitment has been not to really instill a change, but to talk about it.
Joe raises some good questions, Eric, Daniel, but in just a couple of seconds that we have left, you're skeptical that the administration is ready to make any commitment like that?
I think so. I think that there's just not, within the U.S. government, there's not a feeling that type of long-term engagement in Haiti, the way that the caller just described, is something that the United States wants to get involved with at this point. But I also agree with him that may ultimately be Haiti's only hope.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Daniel Erickson is Director of Caribbean Programs at the Inter-American Dialogue. He joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.